This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to hear from Adam Knapp, president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber of Commerce. We will talk with Adam Knapp about what's going on in 2012 as far as hits and misses and how the economy is looking for the coming year. Also on the show, Martin Flanagan, the alleged illegitimate son of Hank Williams Sr. Martin Flanagan, noted musician who is in town performing this evening. And we will hear from John Miller. He's an interesting man, the founder of QBQ, an organizational development company dedicated to making personal accountability a core value for organizations while enabling them to become outstanding. All this today, but first, the news on 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Your numbers, 877-217-5757 or 297-5633. Inkster Show at WRKF.org works as well. Adam Knapp is with us, president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber of Commerce, starting his fifth year in 2013 as the man in charge at BRAC. And what kind of year has 2012 been?
You know, Jim, it's been an incredible year for economic development activity. We had 13 projects so far announced in 2012, economic development projects, in the nine parish area where we lead economic development. And the average wage for the jobs announced this year has been the best average wage per job we've seen announced. And the trend line has been that it's been significantly manufacturing projects, especially along the river, and digital media companies. The average wage was around $69,000 per job for the announced projects this year. About $78 million in new announced payroll of those projects that announced this year, which is also one of the highest we've ever seen in a single year worth of project work. So we're very excited about where things are. All of the numbers that we had set for the year were exceeded for project work. And the region is doing very well competitively right now.
So you're satisfied with the way things are going in a somewhat tepid economy, but Adam Knapp is doing his best, and the Baton Rouge Area Chamber is a big part of our community. And a listener has asked about this competing chamber. What's going on with the Woody Jenkins group?
You know, I couldn't tell you much about that. The focus of our organization has been to lead economic development in the region. And we remain closely focused on that. Our investors, there are some 1,200 of, we make sure that they are seeing the results of our work through economic development outcomes. We've got a significant focus in our organization on a lot of different policy subjects. The areas from education to small business advocacy to transportation issues, we've remained very active in this year and have an agenda we're going to be rolling out in the next few weeks for 2013.
Well, the political realm is always interesting, and by virtue of what you're doing, it's almost impossible not to get immersed in politics. You supported the CATS tax openly.
We did, and you know the region has transportation challenges. It always shows up as one of the top issues of concern. When we've looked at regions that we compete with, one of the key features of their transportation system is having a functional mass transit system. We were very critical during the election that we, as a region, do not have a functional mass transit system. We want to see that that is a part of our system, as well as things we've supported in the past, such as better interstate infrastructure to reduce traffic congestion, something we continue to advocate for.
How concerning is it, the latest announcements that CATS may not be able to provide the routes that people were under the impression that would be provided by voting for this tax?
It's a great question. They have gone back and tried to backpedal on their previous statements to say, oh, no, we absolutely can deliver the routes expected. Our view of their revenue picture, Jim, is that they have far more resources, assuming that the lawsuit against the election doesn't go forward. If it does succeed, then it's a whole different picture. But if they are successful in having the revenues that the election provides, they have the ability to deliver a much better, much broader servicing transit system than we've ever seen in Baton Rouge. And so a lot of that, I think, is noise. Why they're doing it, I couldn't possibly guess. But we see a system that can be much better funded, and I would expect that they can deliver on just about all of those things that were a part of the vision and that were laid out. We supported, for mm-hmm. example, that the $3 million that was going from the city parish to CATS, that should no longer continue to go to CATS. With the resources that have been passed by the election, those dollars can be better spent on things like crime and public safety as a priority interest of the community. And that was expected in what was proposed in 2011, that if those funds were to come through the election, that those dollars from the city parish would return to the city parish each year. And so things like that that have been presented as concerns, we actually have been saying from the beginning would happen, and that those shouldn't stand in the way of their ability to execute the plan that was proposed.
When you say, Adam, they, who are you talking about?
The Capital Area Transit System, they should be able to do that. And the planning, the Blue Ribbon Commission for Mass Transit that Mayor Holden set up, which had a mixture of business people and other citizens on the board, spent a lot of time before the election looking at what the route map should look like, looking at what the infrastructure changes should look like. The major disappointment we had around the CATS election was that governance reform was a critical part of it, and none of that has been put in place. And we continue to believe that it's important that the entity be the governance of that entity mm-hmm. be restructured.
297-5633, if you'd like to talk with Adam Knapp, the president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. He's been here for 5 years, graduate of Davidson University, right?
Davidson College.
Davidson College, formerly the bastion of Lefty Drizel, one of the great basketball coaches who sauntered off to a great career at the University of Maryland. But that was long before Adam arrived.
Long before.
But you came back home.
We did. My wife and I have been here for 10 years and love it here. And we have grown a family here and mm-hmm. Love it all as much as we can.
One of the most handsome men in the city. You wore a hat today, didn't you?
I got out quite a bald head, Jim, as you like to point out, and it gets cold some days like this.
Well, it works well for you, but you look like you're doing well. And Adam Knapp has a tough job, and you've had cooperation with the mayor's office. Did you get involved in the mayor's election at all this year?
Our political action committee is called Future PAC, and it has continued to take positions on candidates. It supported the mayor in his reelection and a number of Metro Council candidates in East Baton Rouge as well. And it's an important part of our business community sees political involvement as an important part of advocating for economic development issues, that the political process and economic development are hard to separate when you mm-hmm. want to see policy reform or infrastructure investments that advance economic development. One must be in the political realm.
Well, there are those such as Lewis Elwood, Woody Jenkins, who believe that by virtue of supporting Mayor Holden, you're supporting a liberal agenda. How do you answer?
I think our positions on business issues stand for themselves. We've been a organization that has a clear focus on economic development, and we stand against folks who stand in the way of economic development positions, and we stand for people who are for issues that relate to economic development, and that we've been very focused that we have that lens and that lens alone that we evaluate things.
And you've been involved to some degree with approaching international partners. How's that working?
It's been a new part of our work. In fact, in the Advocate this morning, there is a front page story about our target industry study, and this is something that we believe is quite important to helping our region focus its resources on those industry sectors that offer the best opportunities for new investment. And in 2012, we did quite a bit of work to begin looking to international sectors as part of our target industries. The five that were released yesterday, for example, we've been making sure that in our outbound economic development work, we've been on three international recruiting trips mm-hmm. this year. We are focused on those sectors and on those countries where those sectors are predominant and are likely to be investing in the U.S. We had two economic development projects, Jim, this year that were foreign direct investment wins that we worked. Mm-hmm. And if you thought of this 5 or 10 years ago, it would be a staggering thing. Two ground up, brand new manufacturing facilities we'll be building in the region. One called Methanex, another called Avalon Rare Metals. Between the two of them, about $800 million in capital investment, over 300 jobs, almost 400 jobs between them being added in the region. Very high-paying jobs and something that is exciting to see, both foreign direct investment examples. And it signifies why we believe this is an opportunity, not just in industries that are traditional, mm-hmm. like chem, petrochem, manufacturing, but in sectors like digital media. We see software companies and foreign software companies interested in being in the U.S. And being in a market like Baton Rouge.
Well, today, Adam is correct. The Chamber is on the front page of the Baton Rouge Advocate, story by Timothy Boone. The Baton Rouge Area Chamber revised five targeted industries, or revealed five targeted industries, where it plans to concentrate its economic development efforts over the next few years. And the Chamber is also targeting several countries where it will seek foreign investment in industries targeted for the local area. And the Chamber in Baton Rouge serves not only the East Baton Rouge area, but also West Baton Rouge, East and West Feliciana, St. Helena, Pointe Coupee, Livingston, Iberville, and Ascension. The politics are much different in some of those parishes, as we saw in the judicial race this past week for the Supreme Court. How do you weigh the interests of people, let's say, in Denham Springs with those in Baton Rouge?
That's a great question. We've found that the views and the interest of everybody in all nine parishes about going after jobs are a great leveler. There's a lot of common agreement that we want to see new economic development projects, and our ability to work across parish lines has been very good over the last now almost 8 years of work as a regional economic development organization. You know, we compete with places around the country that have been acting cooperatively as regions for much longer than we've been doing it in our little short 8 year period of doing it well. And the places we compete with, if you look at Mobile, Alabama, if you look at Nashville, Raleigh-Durham, the area around Austin, these are organizations that we know are very strong in this work, and we want to make sure that we field the best team. Now, one of the best indicators of the success of this partnership has been that in the last 3 years in a row, we've been named one of the top 10 economic development organizations in the United States by a magazine called Site Selection Magazine, which is something of a gospel in this area, and their recognition of the quality of our work speaks to that partnership of nine parishes working quite well.
Adam Knapp, a question from Deborah Davitt. She says, have you ever used the bus line in Baton Rouge?
I never have.
And I never have.
Said this during the transit election, is that I'm one of those many that believes it's been a weak transit system, and it would make it harder for me to get to work from where I live to my office than taking a car. And that's the challenge of this plan, is that they've got to deliver a system that users want to use as an alternative to their vehicles. It's not there today, and that's why I wouldn't use it until it is.
But you could, you know, take a pleasure cruise somewhere.
Maybe I should take a pleasure cruise. I have ridden on some of the things like they do on special occasions, like they'll offer you the ride to the LSU game that you can do the park and ride. That's very convenient. And it's those types of services that we expect, you know, can become the norm, is that they'll offer routes that are obviously useful for folks. For example, some of the park and ride options they've discussed on express routes in the new plan, one of them was a Highland Road into mm-hmm. Downtown and having a couple of stops, I think. A park and ride option like that could be very attractive for those that are stuck in traffic on Interstate 10, as well as a Florida Express route that was conceived to go out to down Florida Boulevard. Those are the types of ideas that I think could make it a much more practical system for those that are stuck in traffic.
Are you satisfied with the leadership of CATS right now?
We expressed pretty significant disappointment about a week and a half ago, 2 weeks ago, in a kind of an op-ed that we released about where they have come from. Their communications has been poor, I believe, and we hope to see much better coming out of the system about how they expect to deliver on the plans that were presented, and that's something that maybe we put on our 2013 wish list, Jim.
Does that mean personnel changes?
I think that mainly we want to see it performing better. That's something that the board is left to figure out how to make sure happens, but there have been a lot of challenges.
Are you on the board?
No.
We'll be back with Adam Knapp, the president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber of Commerce, serving 9 parishes in the capital region, back after this one-minute pause on 89.3 WRK. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Adam Knapp is the guest for a while longer, the man who's been large and in charge on Laurel Street in Baton Rouge. 297-5633. He heads the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. How's your building? It's holding up okay?
It is doing well. We did some renovations, interior renovations this year, so it's looking better than it has in the past.
I always liked that building. And Baton Rouge is a place where I'm sure you welcome people to come by and say hello.
Sit down,
have a cup of coffee right there on Laurel Street. So Adam Knapp is usually there on weekdays and sometimes on weekends. The Baton Rouge Area Chamber, who is the chamber? How many organizations are involved?
We have 1,200 investors in the organization. We are, as I've mentioned, a 9-parish organization that we serve. And so our partnerships beyond just our investor base extend to organizations in all 9 parishes. And that's been the reason that we serve as an economic development area. When you ask the feds, you know, how they view metropolitan areas, this is really the boundary they aligned. We also, Jim, it might be a point of interest, view the idea of regionalism as something that grows to other regions as well, and that our alliances post-Katrina, for example, have extended deeply with the greater New Orleans area. So we work closely with GNO Inc., who are our analog organization in New Orleans, in something we call the Super Regional Partnership, the Super Region Committee. And that effort is something we've been working on significantly, and it means that not only are our alliances in the 9 parish area, but we also try to work in collaboration with their 10 parishes.
Jim on Highland. Jim, good morning. You're on the air with Adam.
Adam, I'd just like to ask you a question. With the largest employment in the city and in the multi-state county area, small business is the biggest engine in the economy, and yet the chamber has no real drive to help small businesses exist in this very difficult economy with the internet. I'd like to take the answer off the air.
Thank you for that question, and it's a very, very important one, and one that we've talked about quite a bit this year, especially with our investors. You know, we are made up predominantly of small businesses who invest in us. If you look at the 1,200 members, by and large, they are small organizations. And so we very much believe in the importance of small business. We have a active small business council that meets monthly, invite everybody that's a part of our organization to participate in it. And it really sets our agenda for this year and next year and our activities in small business. They do a few things very actively. They view advocacy as a key part of their work. They remain very active at the legislature. We're going to have a big agenda next year from our Small Business Council, advocating to protect the very pro-business tax code that has been favorable to small businesses. That was the number one selection out of our survey of small businesses of what we should be engaged in next year. In the past, our advocacy efforts have included trying to prevent new health insurance mandates being added and trying to pass some laws specifically to slow down the adoption of additional health insurance mandates. You know, the rising costs of health insurance have been one of the most onerous issues for small business owners, and we've been actively advocating at the legislature to attempt to slow that down and when there have been mandates to try to oppose them. We have also looked to education and networking as something that our small business members want to see more of. In 2012, we had quarterly small business education seminars that we did in partnership with a group of nonprofit retired executives called SCORE. And SCORE and BRAC have been putting on some very well-attended educational seminars to try to help small business owners seek best practices. We're going to actually increase that activity starting in 2013 with going from a quarterly series to a monthly series, something that we'll be announcing here shortly. But we are very much attuned and interested in hearing from small business owners about issues. We see our advocacy as very much a place where we can be of influence. Our legislative outreach has been probably one of our most successful areas of work, where we can take on an issue, build a significant base in trying to develop a coalition that will try to change those things. And that's where we expect to continue to be active in the future.
Laura asks about your stand on these breakaway school districts.
It's a great question. Another one that we were active in this year, as the Southeast School District legislation came forward, we started out as neutral during the legislative session and brought it to our board with some analysis and questions of what we know of the proposal and what we don't know. What we found was that there was very little information about the costs, the legacy costs that were to impact education. Our view, trying to be objective about these things, is to understand where those costs are going to affect education, not only for the pullout districts, but for the remaining East Baton Rouge district that would be left over after pullouts. We also saw that one pullout can't be viewed in isolation, that if another one goes, mm-hmm. as Central and Zachary and Baker have, if Southeast were to, that the precedent set for how they set the rules for it would probably apply to a South District pullout and perhaps others. So we engaged this year with Dr. Jim Richardson, along with the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, to bring in Dr. Richardson to look at the financial impacts and the infrastructure impacts, the capacity for mm-hmm. kids, and this question about how parents and families get access to special needs programs and gifted and talented programs across these district lines. His study is a great read. If you're interested in the topic, if you're not interested in the topic, it's a slumber. But you will find a lot of great data in that analysis. I expect that we largely remain neutral on the question, as we did when Central and Baker and Zachary were considering it, as long as this question about sort of financial management is understood and set up in the plan. And that's what we found in the proposal last year, was that those questions were not answered significantly.
Now, what about school vouchers? Your stand on those?
Oh, we were very supportive of that. We made that a big priority during the legislature to support the legislation as proposed by the governor. We were quite active in a coalition of partners that were lobbying to see those passed. Our staff on the legislative affairs side worked in close collaboration with about six or seven groups to work through the legislative process, and really commend the legislators who took the hard lead on getting that done. One of the other controversial parts of this, Jim, that really didn't get as much press, hasn't received as much press, but is landmark, is that we've talked as a business community for years about teacher tenure reform, and that was dramatically changed this year. So much of the attention has been on the voucher side, but that also was a very significant positive from our perspective to see teacher tenure dramatically changed going forward after this session.
Were you disappointed in the court decision, striking down the vouchers?
We were. I think that it'll be interesting to see if the Supreme Court takes this up and how it is addressed. But it doesn't change mm-hmm. that as the ruling, as I understand it, addressed it. They didn't strike down the vouchers. Mm-hmm. They said that the voucher law as written is fine. It's the funding mechanism that will be the problem, and that it will have to be some other funding source if they want to go forward in the mechanism that they have done so far to fund vouchers. Would have to come from somewhere else other than the MFP. Now, it'll be interesting to see whether the higher courts agree with that.
Did you support a candidate in the Supreme Court race?
We did not. We tend, Future PAC stays out of judicial elections. Historically, we look at sort of the legislative side, local and state, as our priority.
School board, for sure.
School board, quite actively.
You nailed Noel Hammett last or a couple of years ago.
We have a good school board member in Barbara Freiberg. We're excited to see how the whole board continues to go forward. And I think, importantly, Jim, there's a great superintendent who's come in and is proposing new ideas. And that's a welcome change. I know that a lot of people will have a lot of different opinions about the ideas, as we will. But at least there are ideas for change being put on the table. the agreement that the East Baton Rouge School Board recently struck with the Department of Education for North Baton Rouge turnaround of low-performing schools, we think is very exciting and showed a willingness for partnership on both the state side to bend and negotiate as well as on East Baton Rouge, and that was a welcome change from the past.
Okay, 297-5633 is your number. A few more minutes with Adam Knapp, the president of the Baton Rouge Area Chamber. A hawk on Corsi says someone has hijacked your website. I just went there, and it's something from GoDaddy, so I don't know what's going on, but that does happen on occasion. Yikes. So Adam may have a busy day if his website is down. People certainly rely on those sorts of things to communicate these days.
To make sure that people are using the right address, our website is is, as he says, the website is brac.org.
That's the one. It says, right, this page is parked for free, courtesy of GoDaddy.com.
Oh, no. We'll have to fix that.
Okay. All right. Adam Knapp is a man who has a busy job. How many people are on staff over there at Laurel Street?
Just about 30 staff members that are part of it. I've got to compliment. We have one of the best teams in the business in economic development and in the work that we do. But for their great quality, we couldn't accomplish things as an organization. We've got a great group that we work with, and they are out in the community all the time, leading on a lot of different issues, and can't say enough great things about them.
Now, your predecessor, Stephen Morey, is the Secretary of Economic Development. Do you have frequent interaction with him?
We do. We work daily and weekly on projects. A lot of the economic development work that we do is something that happens as a partnership from the local economic development organization in a parish with us, with the company, and then actively with the state. So we talk to Stephen and his team all the time.
And he had a big win in the state and the governor's office in your old stomping grounds of Lake Charles a few days ago.
You know, the Lake Charles area has been having an incredible run of it. The benefits that we have seen in the Baton Rouge area with low natural gas have also been affecting their economy, and a lot of the gas to liquids projects that are out there that are landing in the Baton Rouge or in the Lake Charles area are enormous. I mean, if you think about the rounding error in the project that was announced for Sasol, it's a number that's bigger than the amount of capital investment in South Louisiana before that announcement. So just the rounding error is an enormous number. The project announced at $16 billion mm-hmm. to $25 billion range of potential investment. It's an enormous project.
That was one of those announcements that kind of slips through the cracks in some places. In fact, the story in the New York Times was larger than the story in the Baton Rouge Advocate. You're smiling.
I'm smiling that it is a national story. What's happening in South Louisiana, not just in the Baton Rouge area, but across the South. And the important thing is those projects, Jim, think about companies like Turner that produce so much mm-hmm. of the pipe that goes into these industrial projects and the construction services and management. It's going to affect the Baton Rouge area from the industrial construction sector that is so important here. And those companies serve and build and develop across the entirety of the Gulf Coast. So it will have ramifications for our region just as it does in Lake Charles.
Norm inquires about the merger of the Shaw Group, actually the taking over of the
acquisition.
Shaw Group by the Chicago Bridge and Iron. How will that affect their Shaw's presence in Baton Rouge?
It is something we've been watching quite closely. We have had an opportunity to sit down with the CEO of CBI to talk to him and his management team about what they see for the future, as well as the leadership across Shaw, and make sure that we understand what their perspectives are on the future. If everything goes as is planned, they will have a vote of the shareholders on the deal on December 21st, I believe, Jim, and then the expectation is that in February the acquisition would be completed. Starting around that time is when I think the public will begin to see more. Really, the company Chicago Bridge and Iron, CBNI, won't be very active in talking about plans or perhaps even making some of those plans until that time. What we have been told and we believe is true is that they will have roughly mm-hmm. the same amount of positions in the Baton Rouge area, if not more positions, going forward under CBI Shaw, under the name of CBI Shaw. They have identified to us that they see the Capital Area and Louisiana as a center of engineering excellence. And if you look at our target industry study, Jim, there's a one of the five targets is called technical research and consulting. And it really envisions that companies like CBNI, companies like Shaw, on the type of work that they do are exactly the type of companies that fit well within our skill base. If you think of the engineering colleges at LSU and and at Southern, we've got a great anchor of talent to serve companies like that and a history of success and a market that is attractive to that type of talent to be here. And so we expect that their word is true, that they will see this as something that is not only stable but has an opportunity potentially to grow above where it is.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Adam Knapp. Good luck to you in 2013, and we hope to visit with you soon. And this man expresses himself well, as should be expected from a gentleman who got an English degree from Davidson College. Thank you, Adam.
Thank you, Jim.
Take care. Good luck. We're joined now by John Miller, the founder of QBQ Incorporated. His organization is dedicated to making personal accountability a core value for organizations. And good morning to you, John.
Good morning, Jim. Thanks for having me on.
And his latest work is Parenting the QBQ Way. And you are a man who has written about all kinds of elements of life. And in this one, you have some fascinating nuggets, and I think the quote from Franklin D. Roosevelt is apropos. We may not be able to prepare the future for our children, but we can at least prepare our children for the future. How do we do that?
Well, that's a great one to pick out, Jim. Thank you. Well, practicing personal accountability. I was down in your fine city of the fine city of Lake Charles a couple of years ago, speaking on personal accountability. And that's what I do. I go around the country talking to groups about accountability and how to get rid of blame and victim thinking, and have done that for many years, Jim. And people started saying, well, I can use this at home. By the way, do you have it in a parenting format? And we didn't, so we just decided to do that this year. So my wife Karen and I, we've raised seven kids, we decided to put it into a parenting format. So the way to prepare our kids for the future is to take ownership for their lives today and not be what we call a weak parent, W-E-A-K, but a strong parent. And I'm not so sure our society right now always supports strong parenting, you know, parenting that teaches kids to take ownership for problems, doesn't enable them, doesn't allow them to become entitled, doesn't allow them to play victim. But that's what we think it takes now to prepare a child for the world, is to take personal accountability as the mom and the dad and teach it to the kids.
Now, you have worked specifically with Fortune 500 companies. How does that experience carry over to what you're talking about now?
Totally connected. I'd go around the country and say to organizations, hey, let's not ask these lousy questions like, why do we have to go through all this change? When is someone going to train me? Who made the mistake? Who dropped the ball? When is my boss going to be nicer to me? And start asking what we call the QBQ, the question behind the question, Jim, which would be, how can I adapt to the changing world? What can I do to develop myself? How can I be my best today? Well, those latter questions I just shared, QBQs, they have a very strong emphasis on the I, personal accountability. What can I do to be better? So we would teach this out in the corporate world, and making the leap to the parenting world was a no-brainer because our clients were already doing it. We just didn't have it into book format, so now we went ahead and wrote the book, Parenting the QBQ Way. And so now moms and dads can avoid asking questions like, when is my son going to learn to make good choices? And start asking, what can I do to model good choices for him? Instead of asking, when is my daughter going to speak more respectfully to me? The parent needs to learn to ask, how can I be more direct with her when she speaks to me disrespectfully? In other words, maybe the parent's been allowing it. So we've got to take personal accountability in the home, and that's really how we prep kids for life.
The book is Parenting the QBQ Way. That's the question behind the question. And the guest is John G. Miller, and we will return with him if you'd like to join us. 75633. Back after this 1 minute pause. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. And the guest for a bit longer is John G. Miller. In a few moments, we'll hear from a fascinating man back by demand, Martin Flanagan, who is the son of Hank Williams Sr. But John Miller's book is Parenting the QBQ Way. I doubt that Hank Williams Sr. used the QBQ way, the question behind the question. But, John, you are advocating some innovative ways for parents to interact with their children. And a question from a listener, do you believe in corporal punishment?
I would say that whenever we demonstrate a hitting of a child, we're probably teaching them the wrong thing. However, Jim, I will not say on this show that we didn't swat our toddlers on the bottom when they were wearing diapers, okay?
You have seven children, right?
You know, the time to be forceful with a child is when they're endangering their lives, and we've done a little swatting of the diapers back when they were one or two. But, no, as the kids were raised, we dealt with their brains and their minds and their behaviors, and we did not engage in corporal punishment. I can hardly say that word.
Yeah, well, that's okay. You're doing fine. What about in the business world, you're constantly talking about values and how to transfer those values from the top to the bottom of a company. How do parents do it with their kids?
Well, the first answer to that is modeling. You know, I've been teaching this for years. It's nothing fancy. It's very simple. Of course, all good stuff is simple, Jim. Modeling is the most powerful of all teachers, period, bar none. Whether it's a manager at work, modeling is the most powerful of all teachers. Well, certainly we've known that for years with moms and dads. So, you know, don't lie in front of your child or complain about your boss over the dinner table if you don't want your child to tell fibs and lies and complain about their friends and their teachers. So modeling is always the beginning of teaching anything to a child.
There's a quote here from John MacArthur. He says, today's parents tend to be more passive, less involved in their children's lives than any generation in our nation's history. They have turned their children over to artificial surrogate parents. Do you agree?
I believe that there are parents who have abdicated. They've abdicated the role, Jim, of teaching. We had a story in the book about a mother who dropped off her teenage daughter for a youth event and yelled over to the youth leader, hey, talk to her about the friend she chooses. Now, wait a minute. That would be mom and dad's job. So very much so, we have parents that have abdicated teaching children the right things to organizations, to schools, what have you. I mean, this whole thing, Jim, you know, why doesn't somebody teach our kids about internet safety? Who's going to stop the bullying in the schools? Well, wait a minute. All that stuff should start at home with mom and dad doing their job.
You reflect on stress in your book and state that family stress is a choice. How is that?
Well, I've been teaching that concept in the organizational world for a long time as well. Stress is a choice. And I love saying those words to people because about 80% nod, 10% think about it, then they agree, but 10% fight it. Oh, no, John, the stress is not a choice. The world does it to me. My boss does it to me. The traffic does it to me. The stock market did it to me. No, all stress is a result of the way we choose to respond to a stimulus, period. We all know that. So now we bring it into families. We say, okay, families, if you choose to have Johnny in guitar and Susie in dance and both of them in soccer, fine. That's a personal value. That's a choice. But just recognize the stress that it will create in the home. Never complain about the stress because you chose it.
It's a fascinating book from an interesting man, Parenting the QBQ Way, from John G. Miller, the author of QBQ, The Question Behind the Question. This one is How to Be an Outstanding Parent and Raise Great Kids Using the Power of Personal Accountability. We thank you for joining us today, John
G.
Miller. More than 1 million QBQ books in print, and congrats on your enormous success as well. Take care, my
friend. That's very kind of you.
And happy holidays. Bye-bye. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. And thanks for joining us, John G. Miller. And New Year's Day will mark the 60th anniversary of the death of Hank Williams Sr. at the age of 29. He died in Oak Hill, West Virginia. He left behind some children we know about, in particular Hank Williams Jr., but the man in studio who was with us not so long ago is Martin Flanagan, who says that you're the son of Hank Williams Sr.
That's correct.
How old were you when your dad passed on the first day of January 1953.
I was a year and a half old when Hank passed away.
Yeah? And where were you at the time?
I had recently been adopted by my adoptive parents in Mississippi, Leland, Mississippi, David and Bert Flanagan.
And you have become quite an accomplished artist in your own right, and Martin Flanagan, who performs all over the world, all over the United States, he'll be in Baton Rouge, and your dad knew this area well, didn't he?
He did, indeed, especially the Shreveport area with the Louisiana hayride mm-hmm. and all that.
Well, tonight, or actually it's tomorrow night, the 15th, at the Red Dragon.
Correct.
Which is a local institution at 2401 Florida Boulevard. Martin Flanagan will be performing along with another daughter of a music icon, Roseanne Cash. That should be quite a show.
It's going to be, Jim. It's going to be a packed house, and I can't wait to not only meet and share the stage with Roseanne, but her husband, John Leventhal, is coming to back her up, and he's quite a musician himself. He's a big record producer, and it's going to be a show and a half.
Well, let's give a listen to Martin Flanagan, who has great ability, and if you believe his story, as most of us who know him do, it's in his genes. Here's Martin Flanagan.
We've kept it a secret for all these many years, but Bo Cephas and me, we finally agree. Set aside our fears and let the cat at last out of the bag about the Williams family tree. You see, there were Senior, and there's Junior, and there's three, and then there's me. Yeah, I'm Hank's bastard child. Explains why I'm a crazy and wild about women, whiskey, and riding love sick songs. They say the fruit don't fall from the family tree. Hell, I'm a living proof. Just look at me. I'm Hank Williams. Illegitimate son. Well, I was born in Montgomery, Alabama, back in 1951. A mother out of wedlock and a singer out having fun, playing honky tonk after honky tonk. Then it's dad, me none, and that's what made me Hank Williams, the legitimate son. Yeah, I'm Hank's bastard child. Explains why I'm crazy and wild about women, whiskey, and riding love sick songs. They say the fruit don't fall from the family tree. Hell, I'm a living proof. Just listen to me. I'm Hank Williams, illegitimate son.
Picture of Hank.
Then look at me
and ask yourself the question, is it just a coincidence? Does the legend look a lot like me? We got the same damn eyes, wear the same hat size. Hell, we even like to have the same fun. And that's what made me Hank Williams, illegitimate son.
Well, there's
very many stories. I'm Hank's bastard child. Explains why I'm crazy and wild about women, whiskey, and writing love sick songs. They say the fruit don't fall from the family tree. Hell, I'm a living proof. You're lately, I'm Michael Williams, illegitimate son. Think I'm doing this for recognition, but the fact is I'm carrying on no family tradition. I'm Hank Williams, illegitimate son. Yeah, I'm Hank Williams, illegitimate son.
This is something that kind of came to me late in my life, and it's been something real interesting, and it's something I've enjoyed delving into. I wish I could get further into it. I've tried contacting my birth mother about it, but I've not been able to contact her. She's either deceased or has no desire to talk about it.
What kind of observations, celebrations, acknowledgments will there be on New Year's Day when it's 60 years will it pass since your father's death?
I would think the radio stations would want to play Hank all day long.
But they probably won't.
They probably won't. 60 years is a long time. People tend to forget, but, I mean, he left a legacy that will go on forever.
And next year, of course, will also be 90 years since his birth in Alabama.
Right.
And you were born?
In Montgomery, Alabama.
His hometown.
Correct.
His hometown. And Martin Flanagan, for a long time you've been telling this story. It seems like more people are paying attention now.
Yeah, it's, it was something for the longest time I thought I'm just going to keep this to myself. But then it was like, you know, what has driven me to become a songwriter? And it's just this, you know, something deep inside me. And when it started coming out, it's like, well, you know what, just why keep it to yourself? You might as well share it.
Have you met Roseanne Cash?
I have not. I look forward to meeting her tomorrow night.
Well, that should be quite a spectacle at the Red Dragon. You played there before.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. Several times.
Yeah.
It's my favorite venue. Yeah, it's a wonderful place.
It's certainly a Baton Rouge-esque venue and a place like you probably haven't encountered in other cities.
It's a real jewel for Baton Rouge. If nobody's ever been, I strongly encourage get online, find out when the next show dates are, and make it a point to get out there. It's a special place.
Mm-hmm. Well, you have this fascination about your father that you never knew?
I'm sorry, how's that?
Well, for example, I know a little about him. I suspect most people who have any kind of affinity for music do. Have you gone into depth as far as who he was and what he stood for and what happened to him?
Absolutely. Hank was my hero long before I ever associate him as my father. The first movie I ever saw in my life was Your Cheating Heart, and it was about the life of Hank Williams. And I have indeed. I've studied him. I think I know most of his songs, know a little bit of everything about him. I know about congenital back problems that he had because I suffer with the same thing. I just wish I could find out more.
You have the same congenital back problem that your father had.
Absolutely. In fact, in 1952, when he was drafted into World War II, they gave him a 4F deferment because of his back. And then in 1972, I got drafted to go to Vietnam, and at the last minute, I got a 4F deferment because of my back problem. So.
Well, you have more than doubled him in years alive. So.
Right. I don't drink as much as he did.
Well, that's another thing, too, the alcoholism. That's quite often a genetic thing. And last time you were here, you said you like to drink.
Oh, yeah. I fight that demon as well.
Yeah?
I do indeed.
And what about Hank Jr.?
I don't have any contact with him. I don't think he'd care for me too much. He sure didn't care for Jet when she came forward. He fought her tooth and nail for 9 years in the court. Mm-hmm. So I don't think he'd be too thrilled to see another one coming along. And who knows how many more might.
Really? Well, what do you know about your birth mother?
Not a thing. When Alabama changed their adoption laws several years back, it allowed me the opportunity to write them and ask that my birth mother either contact me directly or through an arbitrator, or if nothing else, to at least fill out some medical forms to give me some medical history. But I never received anything from her. Like I said, she was either uninterested or was going to take this to the grave. So, and then I requested my sealed file from Alabama as well concerning my adoption and my birth parents, and of course it came to me empty. Same thing happened to Jet when she requested her file. So it was part of that conspiracy to cover up these kids.
And when did you know you had this affinity for music?
Just recently, about in the last 4 or 5 years. It's kind of, I mean, I've played guitar since I was a teenager, and I've written songs, but I never planned on doing anything with it. And it's just been kind of accidentally here in the last 4 or 5 years that a friend of mine said, man, you need to come out and play sometime. And it's like, I can't do that. I'd be scared to death. And I was, and I still am, but it comes rather recently to me.
Well, Hank Williams Sr. Continues to win awards after his passing. Isn't that amazing?
It is indeed. It is indeed. It just shows, you know, how popular and how well-liked Hank was.
I'm looking. He's won 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 Grammys after his death.
Wow.
How about that?
That's pretty incredible.
And the Pulitzer Prize.
Now, that I didn't know.
Yeah. Lifetime Achievement, 2010. So he... Wow. He made an impression on a great number of people in his life, and I know Rolling Stone magazine named him, I think, one of the 50 great rock stars of all time.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I didn't know that either.
I wouldn't consider him a rock star, but he certainly influenced many people.
Yes, he did.
And in all forms of music. What was it about him that was so special in that realm?
You know, Hank he broke the mold. He was just unlike anything else that had come along at the time, and people just loved his music. His songs were from the heart. You know, they were just, they touched so many lives. He just had a way with words that just really got to people.
All right, so tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, Red Dragon. Who goes first, you or Roseanne?
I go first. I'll warm them up
for
Roseanne.
You're on the undercard. She is a big star.
Yes, she is. She's got like 11 number one hit records and 20 in the top 40, 2 gold records. And it's not just the fact that she's Johnny's daughter. She is that talented. She could have been a Smith and she'd have been that popular.
Well, it'll be a family affair tomorrow night with Martin Flanagan and Roseanne Cash at the Red Dragon. We hope you have a great weekend. Thank you for joining us today. For Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.